An ambush.
Squeak, 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 went the wheel of her father's chair.
Savine narrowed her eyes at it, gritted her teeth at it, struggled with every turn of that wheel not to scream. She had been walking her father to work, then wheeling him to work once a month since she was a girl. The same route down the Kingsway between the statues of Harrod and Baiaz that began the frowning parade of the Union's heroes. The same conversation, like a fencing match in which you were never sure whether the steels were blunted. The same laughing at the misfortunes of others. She saw no reason to change her habits, simply because her life was falling apart around her, so she mimed the old routines. Still walking, like a ghost through the ruins of the house she died in. Still wriggling, like a snake with its head cut off. Not laughing at misfortune so much, mind you. One's own bad luck is so much less amusing than other people's.
"Something on your mind?" asked her father, though he wasn't really her father, of course.
"Nothing much," she lied. "Just a string of failing investments, a network of souring acquaintances, a calamitous love affair with her own brother, the ruin of all her dearest ambitions, a constant feeling of nagging horror, an aching chest, occasional waves of weariness, a near-constant need to spew, and the minor detail that she was a bastard, carrying a bastard, who had become a terrified impostor in her own life. Other than that, all good."
Squeak, squeak, fucking squeak. Why the hell had she ever asked Kurnsbeck to build this shrieking contraption?
"How's business?"
Even more disastrous. "Good," she lied as she pushed the chair through the giant shadow of Arnold the Just. "If they keep digging at this rate, the canal will be completed within the month."
"You let Court off with a warning? I thought you might have had him skinned as an example to your other partners."
"Skinned men generate no revenue, and Zuri says forgiveness is neighbour to the divine."
"She has you quoting scripture now. Is she your companion, or are you hers?"
"She's my friend," said Savine, the only one she trusted. "Introducing us may be the best thing you have ever done for me. We all need someone we can rely on. Even you. Please, I can't get out of bed without your mother's help." Savine ground her teeth. What she really wanted was to wheel her father off a bridge and stop somewhere for another sniff of pearl dust, even though her face was still numb from the last one. But the parapets on the bridges were too high, and there was nowhere private to snort on the Kingsway, so for the time being the torture would have to continue. It was what her father was known for, after all. Truly, as he loved to say, life is the misery we endure between disappointments. She wheeled him on between the magnificent sculptures of Casimir the Steadfast and his arch-lector Zola.
"You should try not to blame her."
Her father paused a moment, and Savine watched the breeze stir the white hairs on his liver-spotted pate. "Or at any rate, you should blame me just as much. I have more than enough blame to go around, believe me. I thought forgiveness was neighbour to the divine. Zuri thinks so, but I couldn't say. Neither of them lives anywhere near me." The scaffolding was coming down from the final statue before the shimmering greenery of the park. The king most recently deceased. Giselle the First, that personification of vaguely well-meaning indecision, rendered grimly commanding by the royal sculptors. The sight of his face made Savine more nauseous than ever. Her uncle, Lord Marshal West, stood opposite, with a hint of her mother in a mood about his frown, as he glared off towards the sea, as though he saw the Gurkish fleet there and would sink them with pure force of dislike. Beside him, Baiaz towered again, a statue very much like the one at the other end of the Kingsway. 700 years of Union history, topped and tailed by the same bald bastard. A charming picture. A sturdy man in a superbly tailored coat was blocking their path. Baez himself, Savine realized. Sun gleaming from his hairless pate, looking less like a legendary wizard than a highly prosperous merchant. My own brothers and sisters are forever feuding. It warms my heart to see a father and daughter enjoying each other's company. Or indeed a torturer and an unrelated woman barely speaking to one another.
Lord Baez,
Savine's father sounded distinctly uncomfortable.
I thought you were returning to the north.
Interrupted on my way to the docks by these new statues, and he waved up towards King Jazal. I knew all the men in question, and wished to make sure their likenesses were faithful to the facts. I am supposed to be retired, but as an owner of businesses, I am sure you know, Lady Savine, it is nigh impossible to find people who can manage things properly in one's absence.
Good budgeting is the key, said Savine stiffly. When Angland needed help, the treasury was empty, yet we can afford statues.
I need not lecture you on the importance of investing wisely. A bright future rests on a proper respect for the past. The seeds of the past bear fruit in the present, eh, Your Eminence?
In my experience, they never stop blooming.
Her father reached around to put his hand on Savine's.
We should not take up too much of your time.
I always have time to meet the leading lights of the new generation. The future belongs to them, after all.
Even if we must tear it from the grip of the old, said Savine, twisting her wrist free of her father's hand.
Very little worth anything is ever given away. I am sure you know that, too. Baez smiled at Savine's father, the one in the chair, not the one immortalized in stone. I have no doubt your father will stand here one day. Who has sacrificed more for the Union, after all, except perhaps your uncle?
Baez turned to look up at the statue of Lord Marshal West.
Who gave his life defending it?
I thought we were being faithful to the facts. Savine was in no mood to flatter this old fool.
I understand he survived the Gurkish attack, but died of the sickness you released when you destroyed half the Agrient.
Well,
Baez's good humour did not so much as flicker. If this row of statues tells us anything, it is that there are many ways to tell the same story.
Clearly, said Savine, glancing from the real first of the Magi, shorter than she was with her boots on, to his colossal statue.
Savine, murmured her father, a warning note in his voice.
Such a spirited young woman.
Baez gave her the kind of look she might have given the men of the Solar Society, wondering which was worthy of investment.
The Union will need someone with good sense and a strong stomach to take charge one day. One day soon, perhaps. Someone who does not flinch from what must be said, what must be done. The breakers and burners must be dealt with.
The first hint of real anger in his voice, and for some reason it made Savine flinch.
You were in Valbec. You know the first thing they broke and burned there?
She swallowed a wave of sickness. Calm, calm, calm.
The banking house of Valent and Bulk. An attack on enterprise, on progress, on the very future. If the current administration cannot get a grip on the situation, we must find someone who can.
I hope to serve the crown for many years to come, grated her father. King Orso will need just as much guidance as his father did.
Guidance does not have to be given in the White Chamber. It can come in theatre foyers, or comfortable living rooms, or even, who knows, in writers' offices.
That choice of words could hardly be an accident. Savine felt the heat spreading up her collar. Baez smiled at her, but it did not get as far as his eyes.
We should have a talk some day, you and I, about what I want, and about what you want. Who knows?
You might be the first woman to be immortalized on the King's Way. As the only person with two statues here, you can take my word for it. When it's you they're sculpting, it all starts to seem like an excellent use of funds." Savine was not often lost for words, but she hardly knew how to reply. "I had no idea you picked the leaders of the Union." Baez only smiled wider. "Recognizing one's own ignorance is the first step towards enlightenment. Lady Savine, Your Eminence." He gave them a brief nod and strode off jauntily down the Kingsway, the tails of his expensive coat flicking behind him. Savine's heart pounded as she watched him go, as if she had parried a few thrusts to the heart rather than replied to a few strange remarks. She used to be razor-sensitive to the subtext of every conversation, the dangers lurking beneath the surface, like rocks to the unwary vessel. But she hardly trusted her own instincts any more. "What exactly was he offering me?" she muttered. Her father gave a bitter snort. "The first of the Magi never gives, only taketh. That was not an offer to you. It was a threat to me." "Threats and blackmail and banks?" It was one of those moments when you realize the world may not be quite what you had thought it was. She had been experiencing a lot of those lately. "What kind of wizard is he?" Her father frowned up at Baez's towering statue. "The kind you obey." "I've been made some outrageous proposals," Savine threw over her shoulder to Zuri as she pulled off her gloves, "but that must be the first time a statue on the Kingsway has been put on the table." She became aware of the muffled burble of conversation from the door to her mother's parlour. Odd that she should have a visitor so early. It usually took something special to get her out of her bedroom before lunch. Zuri had her black brows significantly raised. "I believe Lady Ardy might have an outrageous offer of her own to put to you." "My mother and I are not on the best of terms at the moment." "I realize, but the scriptures say those lost in the desert should take such water as they are offered." She gently swung open the door. "No matter who it comes from." Her mother's voice spilled out as Savine stepped suspiciously into the room. "My husband might as well be dead as far as that department goes. And then, Savine, you're here." She smiled over from the cabinet where she was, it hardly needed to be said, pouring herself a glass of wine. "We've a visitor." Another woman was rising from a chair, something of a military cut to clothes mud-spotted about the hem from riding. "This is Lady Finrid Dan Brock." Savine prided herself on being hard to rattle, but Leo Dan Brock's mother in her own mother's parlour was not an easy thing to write off as coincidence, especially when she was currently carrying the woman's grandchild. "Savine." Lady Finrid took her hand in both of hers, and a fearsomely firm grip it was, too. "I've heard so much about you. All good, I hope?" "Mostly." Finrid Dan Brock had an unflinching stare that even Savine found slightly intimidating. "But a woman who produced only good reports would not be fighting hard enough. I'm a great admirer of your achievements as a lady of business." Savine assumed her sweetest smile while she tried to work out what was going on. "As I am a great admirer of yours as a lady governor." "All I did was mind the shop for a few years." Finrid Dan Brock sat as if for a business discussion rather than a social call. "My son Leo governs Angland now." Savine refused to react. "So I hear. What brings you to Adua?" "An invitation to Lord Isher's wedding."
"It'll be the event of the season," said Savine's mother. "Though, if you're asking me, the man's a bloody viper. Wine, Savine."
The conversation with Baez had felt somehow dangerous. This felt even more so. Savine had a sense she would need her wits intact.
"Not for me."
"Lady Finrid," No, but don't let me stop you. You won't stop Mother drinking unless you brought a few fathoms of chain with you.
Savine's mother plopped herself down on a chair, making a perfect triangle of the three of them, wiped a streak of wine from the side of her glass, and sucked her fingertip.
You're salty this morning.
I don't care for the feeling of being ambushed, said Savine, looking from one woman to the other, both formidable in their own ways, and as a pair, positively daunting. They exchanged a glance.
You go, said her mother. I'll chime in if needed.
My son has inherited a weighty responsibility, said Lady Finry. One that he is in some respects well suited for, but in others less so. Savine could well imagine.
He's hot-headed, ignorant and reckless, you mean?
Exactly. Savine should not have been surprised. A woman who had faced down an army of screaming Northmen was unlikely to be put off by a little plain speaking. You, meanwhile, are known to be cool-headed, calculating and patient. It seems the two of you are complimentary.
Fire and ice, threw in Savine's mother between sips.
My son likes to think he can do it all, but, like his father, he has always needed someone beside him. Someone to give good advice and make sure he takes it. Someone to guide him to the right decisions. There comes a time when a mother can no longer do that for a son. She raised her brows expectantly. Savine did not like the way this was going.
I'm not sure what I...
Her mother gave an explosive sigh.
Don't be obtuse, Savine. Lady Finry and I have been discussing a match between you and Leo.
Savine blinked.
A marriage? Well, not a bloody fencing match.
Savine stared from her mother to her prospective mother-in-law. It was an ambush. An expertly prepared pincer movement, and she was outflanked on both sides. She lifted her chin and played for time.
I'm not sure the two of us are suited. He is a good deal younger than
I understand you felt differently when he last visited Adua, said Lady Finry, looking at her significantly from under her brows. It took a moment for the implications to sink in.
He told you that?
Savine's mother raised a hand.
I told her that.
How the hell did you find out?
Don't be cross and don't be coy. Neither suits you. Zuri is worried for you, as a good servant should be, as a good friend should be. She is thinking of your best interests. We all are, believe it or not.
Her mother leaned forward, holding her eye, and put a reassuring hand on Savine's knee.
She told us about your situation.
Savine's face burned. She found she had put a hand to her stomach and angrily snatched it away. She was used to stabbing other people with their secrets. She did not at all enjoy being impaled on one of her own.
Forgive me if I am blunt, said Lady Finry. I have spent much of my life around soldiers.
Fancy that, snapped Savine.
So did Mother in her youth. It's a shame youth has to end, sang Savine's mother, fluttering her eyelashes.
Then she gave Savine's knee a parting pat and sat back, murmuring out of the corner of her mouth,
You see that bluntness won't be a problem.
Then let us speak plainly, said Lady Finry. It will not be long before your condition becomes difficult to hide. Savine angrily set her jaw, but she could hardly dispute the facts. The laces of her corsets already needed even more brutal handling than usual. It could be a disaster for you, or it could be an opportunity. Turning disasters into opportunities is what an investor does, isn't it?
Wherever possible, muttered Savine.
My son has title, fame, courage, and loyalty.
And is a damnably handsome fellow, observed Savine's mother.
You have wealth, connections, cunning, and ruthlessness.
And in the right light can look rather well yourself.
I doubt there is a more eligible young man in the Union, said Lady Finry.
Unless you were to marry the king, I suppose.
Savine's mother coughed wine down her dress.
damn it! Silly me!
Your pride is well earned, said Finry, but the time has come to put it aside. Her mother was dabbing at herself with a handkerchief.
Really, you could be the most envied couple in the Union. You're far too clever not to see the sense of this.
And certainly far too clever to raise a bastard alone when you have such an advantageous alternative. By all means, lead my son a little dance, if you please. No man values what he gets too easily. But there really is no need to drag this charade out any further between the three of us.
Sabine slowly sat back. There had been a golden moment when her fingertips had brushed the crown, her wildest ambitions so nearly in her grasp, her august majesty, the High Queen of the Union, before whom all must kneel or suffer. But, she had to admit, Her Grace, the Lady Governor of Angland, was not a bad second best. She had tried following her heart, and it had led her straight to shit. She and Leo Danbrock were an excellent match in every way that counted. He would need some moulding, some steering, some discipline. But who could argue with the quality of the raw materials? A wedding to a famous hero might be the very thing to turn her fortunes around. Sabine had spent her whole life scheming, plotting, striving to control events. There was a certain relief in yielding to the inevitable.
No, she said, almost a sigh, I don't suppose there is.
She had been made many proposals of marriage, but this was the first she had actually accepted, and the only one made not by the prospective husband, but by his mother.
I think I'll take that drink now, she said.
I too, Lady Finry issued a neat little smile. Since we've something to celebrate. Savine's mother grinned as she trotted to the cabinet.